What Does Law Mean, Mumu? The podcast series. Hello, it's Pauline Maranon here again in this journey through our podcast series of the book, What Does Law Mean, Mumu? An Introduction to the Law for Young People. In this podcast, we're going to reflect on, discuss, expand a little bit, or dig deeply into some of the subjects which were discussed in Chapter 5. Chapter 5 was headed The Court's Experience, Evidence, the Museum in a Historical Barracks, and the Futility of War. What an interesting progression there. Having left the courts, the four young people had so much to take in, so much to think about in relation to evidence, which we had discussed and touched on, and referring to the advance in the investigation of crimes with what's known as DNA technology or science, DNA fingerprinting, DNA typing, DNA profiling, identification processes by using samples of hair, blood, and other biological samples, which is based on unique patterns called polymorphisms in the DNA. How that has increased the opportunities for detecting culprits in relation to criminal investigation. We discussed that, and indeed, seeing that the group was tired, Mumu took them for slight diversion, and they went up to a very well-known historical barracks in the centre of Dublin called the Collins Barracks. It's now housing a number of museums and extra exhibitions, a place of great interest for young people, where they can study different projects in the Living History series, which is a very interesting way of introducing young people and not so young people to the study of history, where items of clothing, actual possessions are taken and discussed so that they can actually hold the shoe or see the items that people would have used as utensils or other implements in their houses at different times in the past. They recalled one event there, or two of the learners in the group had been there before with Mumu, as it happens, and they had been there at the time where there were celebrations or remembrances and commemorations of the First World War, and they did a living history exhibition in relation to that, which was very interesting, with actors dressed up in the uniforms of the First World War, showing the equipment, the provisions that they would have had, the kind of mugs they would have had in their gear out of which they would have had to drink. And at that event, both Aver and Nova had been extremely impressed by some of the introductions to the realities of what it was like for those young men who were in the trenches in the First World War. Interesting then that they should find themselves there again with their two friends, Lex and Rex, who have joined this voyage of discovery, as it were, this walk and talk, discussing aspects of the law, how it works, how it supports and enables democracy, and all the other emanating subjects from the core principle of our desire for justice and equality, balance and fairness. And in the course of this discussion, they drove up to the military barracks and they looked at an exhibition of military history which was going on at the time. That led to some discussions about World War I and casting their minds back to what they had seen in that living history exhibition at the commemorations of the First World War that had happened some time back. They had a cold drink in the corner of what would have been the large quadrangle, the big parade ground of this barracks, which had been one of the last barracks occupied by the British Army before Ireland gained its full independence. The group went off and Nova was having quite a lot of fun, asking the group to move up and down in serried ranks, the four of them or the three of them, and getting them to walk across this. The voices echoed in this extraordinary quadrangle from the kind of cloisters that surrounded it. It was a telling moment because, having discussed the exhibition of the different histories of battles and wars, and having talked as they did, Mumu herself began to reflect and recalled a documentary that she had seen recently about the very famous soldier who was known as the Last Fighting Tommy. Tommy is an expression used in the British Army to refer to the lowest possible rank, and he had been the longest surviving member of the First World War. Died in 2009 at the age of 111. And a documentary had been done a few years prior to that because this man, Harry Patch, had lived to the age of 100 before he had been able to discuss his experiences in the First World War. And at 100, having decided he was going to start to speak, he came out with a very strong voice against war, which he was most vociferous in describing as a license to murder, and even worse expressions. He turned his hand to trying to spread the word about the futility of war. And during one of the documentaries that Mumu happened to see about him, he had travelled back to the cemetery and the scenes of the famous Battle of Passchendaele, the Battle of Ypres, where he had been seen by many now in retrospect to have been an example of the sheer futility of war, in that it was particularly disgusting, mud everywhere. It seems to be remembered for the mud and the mire in which they were trying to survive. And he went back to the German cemetery as well, and he was photographed sitting in his wheelchair looking at the monuments of the unnamed graves, the soldiers who had clearly died and perished in that battle, but who didn't have a grave of their own, hoping against all odds that he would perhaps see on the names that were inscribed in the monument the names of three of his very close friends with whom he had been when they were hit by a shell. And Harry had survived. He had been injured badly, taken a hit in his abdominal area, managed to survive. His three friends had perished. And very poignant scenes of him looking up from his wheelchair at the monument, hoping against the odds, as I've said, that his friends' names would appear there. And then he took the step of going to the German cemetery and decided that he would there meet the longest and last surviving member of the German army from that battle. And during that exchange, when he sat in that German cemetery, he asked that two acorns beneath him on the grass be taken, and could he take them with him, which he did back to his care home in Somerset, where he was spending the later years of his life. And there was a final scene of him sitting outside in the garden, having planted the two acorns, and his final words in that documentary were, "They shall grow." And it was a very poignant documentary because he wasn't able to talk about his experience. He was too old to serve in the Second World War, and he had done various voluntary. He was helping in the defence of Britain from different perspectives, but he couldn't go and fight in the actually fight. He was too old at that time. He was extremely traumatised, and in many respects, a lot of the symptoms that he demonstrated would now be referred to as post-traumatic stress disorder. That it took a long time for that to be recognised for people who fought in armies. It used to be called different things, which tended in the past to imply a certain weakness on the part of the soldier for having been traumatised, shell-shocked and words like that, where now we recognise it as a reactive condition that sometimes sets in, not immediately, but sometime after having returned from the experience, and it can take many forms and needs very careful handling. People comment about him in that even opening a fridge sometimes was traumatic because a sudden flash of the light would bring him back. So having watched the young group emulating the marching and about turns and halting and walking as if to copy people marching in order. To see them doing that reminded Mumu of how they were almost, their generation, being handed, perhaps not intentionally, but a belief that, or an understanding, that war was cyclical. Having come from an exhibition which just showed about all of the wars through history, the past history, it surely was inevitable that they would see this as a cyclical thing and somehow expect that there would be wars. And this became a foremost worry in her mind when they returned. She drew their attention to the story of Harry Patch. She called up the documentary on her phone and they looked across her shoulder to see this interview with him, the words he was expressing, and how passionate he was. They were all extremely impressed. And then, of course, used the words of shock and amazement, that if someone spoke that vehemently about this, how on earth could people not listen? Very simple questions. And then as they listened to his voice and his attempt at reconciliation in that documentary, and also anecdotally, Mumu had heard that when he was there in the battalion he was involved in, that he and three of his friends, three of his gang, had made a vow, a promise together, that they'd never aim to kill, that they would just aim at the legs. And that was quite an extraordinary revelation. He would have been around 19 at that time when he was in the trenches, the muck and the dirt and the mire of Passchendaele, the Battle of Passchendaele, that went on for a considerable time from July to November of 1917. Watching him, Mumu became quite moved, because she was haunted by the fact that he didn't appear to ever talk about the Second World War or express his views about how, having gone through the First in such a short time, that the world could go into a Second World War. The young group of learners noticed that she'd become visibly moved or was about to become moved, and they stretched over, hardly able to conceal tears running down their cheeks. And so she apologised profusely, because of course this was only one battle, one of many in that war, one of many in subsequent wars, one of so many wars that are currently raging. And so she felt a bit ashamed to be showing only a sense of emotion and sorrow at that experience. But nevertheless, the young group seemed to understand, and both Rex and Lex called out and said, but how, having heard someone like that speak so passionately, how can people not listen? And in the words that only a young person can utter without people scoffing and deriding the innocence and the profoundness of the comment, but Novo called out and said, oh, Mumu, why can't we just share this world equally? We only have one world. So there were messages there for the group that day, and they seemed to learn a lot. They seemed to take in a lot. And in many respects, it was quite significant, because as a group of young people, they were able to recognize the futility of war. They were able to recognize the deep sense of passion that Harry Patch had demonstrated in suffering for all those years, unable until his 100th birthday to even speak of the horrors that he'd experienced. And then realizing that having lived so long and still to be of full voice, that he could somehow use his strength and his voice that he had been given beyond most normal people's expectations of a lifetime, that he could continue for whatever time he had left to be an avid pioneer and an anti-war hero, which he was. People spoke very well of him when he passed away. Many paid tributes, including Prince Charles in the United Kingdom and others who knew of his great loyalty and his great sense of service. And those, I suppose, who were aware of the latter years of his life and how he had devoted himself to trying to persuade others to concentrate and focus on the futility of war. So it was a very deeply emotional and intellectual day on that visit, at the end of having been to the court and having spoken about evidence and having examined the advances in that area, to have become immersed in something of a philosophical nature about man's inhumanity to man, man's folly, and indeed the lack of any kind of learning after horrid experiences, and the lack of any kind of ability to change course and find a different way. So if anyone is going to find a different way, if anyone is going to follow Nova's exclamation and answer that question, why can't we all live together and share this world equally? We only have one world. I think it'll be this generation. And as I refer to later in the book, there was an expression that was quoted a couple of times of Seamus Heaney, the famous poet laureate, eminent for many reasons, but also because of his ability to encapsulate in just a few words a very strong message. And he referred to every generation having its own conveyor belt. And in many respects, the aspirations that we have now, looking back and in any expectation of looking forward with a sense of hope, would be that the young people on their conveyor belt now will see the wisdom in making the future a little bit better and free of the kind of violence that has haunted us for the last numbers of centuries. Thank you.